שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוח, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the sixth day, Kaf Tes ben Menachem Av, Parasha Asrei, Tashinayim Vav, the evening of the fifth day, Thursday, 1 September 2016. Webcasting from Israel, seen through a glass darkly. That was my favorite Ingmar Bergman movie. The title, I think, is taken from Christian scripture, which was taken from Jewish scripture, I think. Israel is seen through a glass darkly. That term might apply to seeing it through the modern media. Every image that we see of Israel in newspaper photos, online photos, and videos on TV is seen through the lens of a camera that is, by its very narrow image, displaying only a video bite of reality, of the true situation. In any case, no less important than the eye of the cameraman and what he focuses on is the mechanism of interpretation in the brain of the observer. Take, for example, yesterday's front page in the International New York Times. There, front and center at the top, above the fold, a large photograph of Mitzpe Dani, a so-called outpost in the Shomron in Samaria, which outpost is seen to be, in the background, a few caravans, like semi-trailers without their tractors, on a high point of ground whose foreground and background displays scrubland and stones in all directions. There are no other structures in sight besides these caravans, as we call them, and the article tells us this is a home to 40 families. There's no agriculture in sight. It's a landscape, virtually no trees. The photograph is 8.5 inches by 5.75 inches, and on page 3, the continuation of the story likewise sports another photo of the same size, showing this line of caravans from another angle. In this one, too, there's not another building or field or orchard, anything in sight. And the title the editors put on this piece, written by the Israeli anti-Jewess, the permanent stringer here, Isabel Kirshner, was, quote, "Israel quietly allowing pirate settlements." And in the caption directly under the front page photograph, it says, quote, "Such outposts are giving Israel an ever greater foothold in the territory," close quote. We also learn that the name of this outpost commemorates a Jew who was stabbed to death on the other side of the two-lane blacktop that appears in the picture that runs past the caravans, obviously a country road. Kirshner reports that there are some 100 of these places established after the Oslo bombing terrified many sober Jews, my words, not hers. And she said these outposts went up at the behest of Ariel Sharon in 1998, that's half a decade after the Oslo abomination kicked in, who called out to Israelis to take to the hilltops and take them because he saw the lunacy in his friend Shimon Peres' crackpot scheme and that the Oslo cultists were going to destroy the country if things went ahead with the Oslo nonsense. Kirshner says that today a third of these outposts have been declared legal by Israel. At one point, she focuses on Shimon Riklin, age 53, who in 1998 answered Sharon's call to action and was a leader in creating this particular outpost. Kirshner quoted him saying, quote, "I felt then there were not enough settlers in Judea and Samaria to ensure the future of these settlements." She called him a, quote, "strident pro-settler voice in the Israeli news media, referring to the West Bank by its biblical name," close quote. And what you just heard functionally is a template of words in the New York Times. Repeatedly over the decades, reporters have inserted this, or the copy editor in New York inserts these words every time someone uses the terms Judea and Samaria. I don't know if these journalists like her are literally instructed by their editors to do this, or the copy editor in New York does it, but when a Jew refers to what Isabel Kirshner, the anti-Jew-Jewess, calls the West Bank, she must interpret for the reader and say that he's using, quote, biblical names. And that, of course, makes him by implication a religious fanatic who does not want peace with the Palestinian victims of Zionism. In the second picture, on page 3, there is Shimon Riklin himself standing in the middle of that obviously little trafficked road overlooking the string of caravans. And there is this two-sentence caption below that second photograph, quote, "Shimon Riklin one of the outpost entrepreneurs, in internal quotes, who settled in Mitzpe Dani. Second sentence. Pirate settlements like this are blocking the path to peace between Israel and the Palestinians, close quote. This is amazing. This is a caption under a photograph, and this language is fit for an editorial. Pirate settlements. Yes, they're pirates, these people. Pirate settlements are blocking the path to peace between Israel and the Palestinians. And I says who? Who is this caption writer to make such a decisive judgment that these handful of Jewish families on this barren hilltop are blocking the path to peace? This is not serious, responsible journalism. But this is what happened to the New York Times and lots of the once serious newspapers in the West when it comes to Israel. Israel Kirshner refers to Judea, origin of the word Jew, as the West Bank, and wants her readers to know that this settler uses these biblical names, which is evidence he is a believing Jew and is therefore a no-no in the modern world. Religion was pronounced by Karl Marx to be a narcotic to lull the masses exploited by the capitalists led by the Jew bankers. And this is not the first time I've seen such photographs in the New York Times of these barren hilltops in Judea and Samaria with not an Arab dwelling, Arab village, Arab vineyard, anything in sight. I'm reminded of Herman Melville's remark, you know, author of Moby Dick, who was here in 1857, and said the Holy Land had become, quote, a caked, depopulated hell, and much of the land today still looks exactly as it did in 1857, pretty much like what you see in these photographs. A decade after Melville was here, his fellow great American 19th century novelist, Mark Twain, paid a visit and had the same reaction to this bleak landscape. Neither said anything about any ancient Palestinians living in Palestine. Not a word about meeting any of them, not even one of them. And they learned nothing of this alleged ancient people's ancient unique culture and society. So here are two more pictures in the New York Times bearing evidence over the decades of the desolation these outposts have sprung up in, dispossessing no ancient Palestinian family from their ancient ancestral lands, in their hands since the beginning of time, one would believe. And what is the thrust of the article here, and certainly of the caption, this most tendentious caption I've ever seen, is that the presence of these infant Jewish communities like Mitzpe Dani are the obstacle to peace in the Middle East for their encroachment upon Palestinian land that the Palestinians have loved so much they chose, I guess, not to develop it, but let it lay fallow for all time. Times once had a picture of an old Arab in sandals, jeans, keffiyeh, and akal, the rope around their head to hold the shemat in place, standing on a ground identical to what is seen in these photographs, these scrub and stones, no trees, and the article explained that this was Ahmed so-and-so, who claimed this land was his father's and his grandfather's and his great-grandfather's, and the Israelis want to steal it from him. Another case of beloved Palestinian soil, in reality, dead soil, that no one pays any attention to. I've seen Arabs like him numerous times on TV barking, they're stealing our land, and here is this New York Times, Isabel Kirshner, New York Times Jewess, backing the fantasy of Palestinians, desirous of peace, won't let them have it. Here's an anti-Jew Jewess in our time, for whom the name of the landscape in these pictures is West Bank. Such anti-Jews wouldn't dream of using the biblical names, would they? Why not? When someone complains that using biblical names is to reframe the conflict into a religious conflict that cannot be solved, so let's not use biblical names and let these religious fanatics get into the act. Let's just call them by their modern political names. So, no more biblical names. Let's no longer use the names Jaffa and Gaza, Jericho, Hebron, Golan, Beersheba, Bethlehem, Nazareth. And let's not call Jerusalem Jerusalem. Sometimes I think that post-Jewish Israelis like Isabel Kirshner, for whom their religion is being anti-religious, will not be content until Jerusalem itself is renamed. It has to be redivided, The old city has to be handed back to the Arabs for their capital, and Israelis like her will be happy to call it Al-Quds. And that was Psalm 121. Now, speaking before about Jerusalem, a name world anti-Jewry uses, if not Judea and Samaria, the otherwise sophisticated Czechs bowed down to the demand of the ambassador from Balestine that they unfortunately recognize as a worthy interlocutor to redo a text used throughout the Czech Republic by middle and high school students showing and calling Jerusalem the capital of Israel. The barbarian representing ultimately the PLO terrorist syndicate got the Czechs to agree to label Tel Aviv as the capital of Israel. And so it will be in the next edition of this atlas. The Arab terrorist posing as a civilized diplomat insisted that, quote, the current map not only presents something which is unacceptable to Palestinians, but also shows something which goes against international law and is against the official position of the European Union, which includes the Czech Republic, close quote. The Czech Foreign Ministry issued a statement saying, quote, the Foreign Ministry's position on the issue of Jerusalem is clear and coincides with the position of the European Union. The Czech Republic does not recognize East Jerusalem as part of Israel. The European Union views Jerusalem as the future capital of two countries, Israel and the future Palestinian state, close quote. And never mind the contradiction between speaking of a future Palestinian state when the protest was made by the ambassador from Palestine living in Prague. Which is it? Is there or is there not a Palestine state? In any case, it's just another piece of evidence that, contrary to leftists everywhere, which in our time commonly connotes anti-religionists that believe there is a conflict between Israel and Palestinians who want their own state, the crux of the matter here is, again, religion. Jerusalem. Unlike other famous cities in history that became famous for their success and their prominence, Jerusalem sits on no important waterway, no important source of natural resources. It has historically been, before the age of the automobile, hard to get to. It sits astride no caravan route for international trade. Its importance historically as a political capital ended before the exile to Babylon in the 6th century before the Common Era. No, its importance has always been exclusively religious. And that is what is behind this current news item from Prague. For Muslims, not only are they the sovereign owners and masters of the holy cities of Mecca and Medina in the Arabian Peninsula, Jerusalem is theirs too, and so is Hebron, which means the Jews have ownership over none of their holy cities. Islam took them away from Al-Yahud, and now the new dispensation even claims the Jews never had them. Today's morning papers reported on former Central Command Commander-in-Chief responsible for Judea and Samaria, Brigadier General retired Gadi Shamni, who spoke at the Interdisciplinary Center in Herzliya and said bitterly, quote, "We are world champions in occupation and have brought it to the level of art. I was the Commander-in-Chief of the Central Command, General of the Occupation, and I ask ourselves, is this what we want to be? Israel will never agree to an arrangement that does not answer to Israel's security needs, and the Palestinians will not accept any continuation of the endless occupation. The only acceptable solution is an agreed separation. The states in the region are ripe and interested in creating full relations with Israel, but will not do this so long as the Palestinian issue is not solved. Israel has to influence the regional framework via connections with different states and its relationship to the United States," close quote. Typical of an IDF general whose career was in an institution founded by the post-Jewish left here. He's incapable of understanding our neighbors who are anything but post-religious as he is. Clearly, this Israeli general is not a strategic thinker either. I don't doubt he knows how to deploy armed forces to fight our violent enemies and is probably very good at it, but he makes no sense here when he says rightly that Israel will agree to nothing less than preserving its military needs, which means no retreat from the high ground. But then he calls for separation from the Palestinians and an end to the occupation. And what is that if not a retreat from Judea and Samaria? That's when yours truly virtually overnight switched politics. But after also some years of study, when I understood the hostility of these Arab Muslims and why it's so dangerous, and why Israel cannot retreat to the 1949 ceasefire line, even if there were no 500,000 Jews living in Judea and Samaria these days. In this way, the settlements have never been anything but a distraction from the true obstacle to peace, which is the Arab Muslims' hostility to Jews, recorded in every century of Islam. And since Israel cannot retreat from Judea and Samaria, it has no choice but to settle and claim these hills for Israel. Rightfully, legally, morally, religiously. Gadi Shamni is so typical of Israel's ruling class of post-religious people. He's just insensate to the cosmic hatred of the world of Islam and the Arabs' appetite for stealing what does not belong to them. They desire peace, and Gadi Shamni and his ruling class people, but they live inside a cocoon of dreams of peace based on the handing back of the spoils of war that Israel captured in righteous self-defense in 1967. They inhabit a world in which the Arab Muslims care only for this real estate, Judea and Samaria, and of course the Temple Mount. So if Israel gives them what they want, Israel will be paid back with their gift of peace. Give them what they demand, and they will become our friends and put an end to their murderous hostility. This was the thinking of some of the shallowest, most uneducated provincial Jews in Jewish history. Rabin, Peres, Balin, Pundak, Savir, Hirschfeld, etc., etc. These uneducated in the world of Islam and the history of the Jewish people thought that Arafat, this Egyptian-born and raised Muslim Brotherhood devotee, until he started claiming to be an ancient Palestinian in his 30s, that he really cared for his suffering people, the Palestinians, and all Israel had to do was turn over Yesha, Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip to him, and peace would descend on Israel like the morning dew. What arrogant, uneducated fools these leftists have been.
צבע אדום זקות וחודרות כל מסך כמו יהלום אז למה עיני עכשיו בצבע אדום אומרים שאין גבול לשמחה ואין לה מקום גם לא צבע אדום אז למה עיניה תמיד בצבע אדום? למה, למה, כמה היא שמחה וכמה טוב לה שזה לא אתה? אז למה עיניה תמיד בצבע אדום? למה, למה, כמה היא שמחה וכמה טוב לה שזה לא אתה אז למה עיניה עכשיו בצבע אדום ומה מתהפך לטובה פתאום באמצע היום אז למה עיניה עכשיו בצבע אדום שאין גבול הריקוד ואין לו לבוש גם לא צבע אדום אז למה עיניה תמיד בצבע אדום למה למה כמה היא שמחה וכמה טוב לה כשאתה אז למה עיניה
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. Yes, the great divide in Israel is between the religious and the aggressively secular which plays out in the domestic sphere in the matter of work on Shabbat, as we saw last Shabbat, and in foreign policy in one's attitudes towards the Arabs in Judea and Samaria. Last segment, the focus was on Gadi Shamli in Herzliya yesterday, and the day before that, a soulmate of his, former head of the Mossad, Tamir Pardo, opined during a speech he gave in the north during a yearly commemoration for Druze soldiers who died in fighting for Israel. He says that the great threat is not from Iran. Israel's greatest threat is civil war. Quote, internal division can lead us to civil war, and we are already on that path. If a society passes a certain line in division and hatred, it is a real possibility to see a phenomenon like a civil war. Society at large bears responsibility to prevent these divisions, not just the leadership, close quote. And as for the Palestinian issue, he said, quote, without a diplomatic solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, we will never be able to achieve normalization with our Arab neighbors, close quote. And two whopping mistakes here. It's classic post-religious Israeli thinking. First of all, he sees an Israeli-Palestinian conflict, when my book shows how that language was invented to camouflage the Arab-Israeli conflict. And as for aspiring to normalization with our Arab neighbors, he seems unaware that this too is a major fantasy. For what is the flavor of normal relations with the Arabs? Between themselves, there's constant friction. But with us, they want a nice, friendly relationship. During the Iran-Iraq War of 1980-1989, Sunni Arab Iraq, claiming to be a Ba'athist regime, invaded next-door Shia Iran to steal its oil fields, during which war Syria, also claiming to be Ba'athist, sided with Iran against fellow Arab next-door neighbor Iraq. As a result, the border between Iraq and Syria, both Arab Arab Ba'athist regimes, was closed for like 17 years. For even after the war ended, there was still bad blood. During that war, because the Yemenis sided with Iran, next-door neighbor Saudi Arabia punished Yemen by expelling from Saudi Arabia 1 million Yemenis, foreign workers, in that country. Suddenly, 1 million Yemenis in Saudi Arabia had to pile into cars and with whatever movables they could and flee back to Yemen, where a typical Middle East refugee tent city was set up for these refugees. Here is the former head of Mossad, who imagines normal relations with our neighbors after we solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, providing we ourselves do not erupt into civil war. What you're listening to here is the same mind at work that we heard out of Yair Golan, who addressed soldiers on Holocaust Remembrance Day and intimated that Israel is on the way to Nazism if it does not change its treatment of the Ancient Ones. That was the implication. I think what we're hearing here is secular Israel fearful of losing its dominance to the rising community of religious Jews, who just have more children than they do. The pioneers who led Israel into independence thought they were creating a post-Jewish non-religious state, and now that community sees its grasp slipping away. Tamir Pardo's fear of a civil war is a reflection of fear of seeing the Israel he grew up in changing. Gadi Shamni, too. What they and their community almost cannot understand is the religious fire that burns not only in the savage breasts of the Arabs here, like the one in the Arab who in the dead of night in Nablus fired on a visiting delegation of Jews to the tomb of Joseph and wounded a soldier. The fire that burns as well in the hearts of Western anti-Jews who back them, type of people we find in Europe, Jewish and non-Jewish alike. In another month, there will be elections among the Arabs in Judea and Samaria, and as in 2006, the Hamas is expected to win handily. Last night, security forces in Hebron arrested 6 Hamas terrorists, and Hamas remembers the local Muslim Brotherhood franchise. For them, if not for Gadi Shamli and Deputy Chief of Staff Yair Golan and Tamir Pardo, their war has nothing to do with the absence of a Western-style nation-state for Palestinians and has everything to do with their religion. Only when Israelis understand that and understand the true resistance to this must also be religious. Israel will set itself back on the right track.
כי כל אחד מישראל צריך לעסוק בתיקון זה, להעלות השכינה מהגלות. ואפילו אנשים פשוטים לגמרי והמון עם שאין יודעים בין ימינם לשמאלם, עם כל זה גם הם, אם זוכים ללך בדרך הישר לפי ערכם, דהיינו לסור מרע ולעשות טוב. כי אפילו איש פשוט לגמרי יודע מה שעשה התורה, ואם עיניו לנוכח יביטו לסור מרע ולבחור בטוב, אז נעשים כל התיקונים בעולמות העליונים ממילא על ידו, וזוכה להקים השכינה מנפילתה, כפי מה שזוכה לקדש ולטהר עצמו. מקדש מלך, עיר מלוכה, קומי צעיר מתוך ההפך, רב לך שבט בעמק הבכה, עלייך חמלה. תנאי נאי נאי תנאי נאי נאי תנאי נאי נאי תנאי נאי נאי. נמצא שכל אחד מישראל הוא עוסק לחפש ולבקש את הבת מלך, להשיב על אביה, כי ישראל בכללם הם בחינת שני למלך, כי הם מושלים בעולם, מהו מחיי מתים, רופא חולים, אף ישראל כך, וכל אחד כפי מה שזוכה לעסוק בעבודתו, שעל ידי זה עוסק כביכול לחפש ולבקש השכינה, כנסת ישראל, להוציאה מהגלות. כמו כן, השכינה מתגלה עליו מתוך תוקף גלותה, ומתעלמת ומסתרת עצמה, ובא אליו בסתר, ומגלית לו מקומה ומושבה, ומה לעשות בשבילה, באופן שיזכה למצוא אותה.
התנערי מאפר קומי, לבשי בגדי תפארתך עמי, על יד בן ישי בית הלחמי, קרבה אל נפשי גאלה.
And the voice that you don't know from that is Rabbi Lazar Brody. Okay, that's it for this evening and for this week. I'll be back, God willing, after the Holy Sabbath. Until then, Laila Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Me'eretz Yisrael.